The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
This is the only country where we were told that it's unsafe for us to stay in the city where we were playing a match. This is the only country where we were told that to be safe, we should be at the stadium close to 5 hours beforehand with our players having to lie down on the ground and in the club facilities for their rest. I don't know what that says, but I do think that it is time for some introspection and maybe retrospection as to why this has occurred.
Be your warning to the United Kingdom, because I always think when people are from your neck of the woods, they know how things go down. And when you see scenes like in Birmingham, when you see these pro-Palestine marches, when you see the states crumbling to the demands of these people, what do you see happening next?
There was a lot of signs were hanging around the Villa Park. It says, if you see a Zionist, call us, we'll take care of him.
That's so
it's funny. All over again. You promised us, the government of the UK, Britain promised never again. They promised that.
Yeah.
So I'm really just sending a message to everybody. You're failing us. You're failing us again. Why, let's say they hang those flyers. Why didn't you take them off immediately?
Yeah.
Why they left them there? And I took a picture with that. I took a picture with all those signs. Shame on you. Shame on the government. Shame on the police, seriously, for not taking those things. It's all over again back in the 1940s when Britain defeated the Nazis and promised us they will never, ever happen again. It's happening again, but only this time, instead of the Nazis, we have extremists in Birmingham doing the same thing all over again.
Every match that the barbaric Israeli establishment or their teams are at, we will be at.
What does Remembrance Sunday mean for you? What is your message?
My message is, I can see in my mind's eye those rows and rows of white stones of all the hundreds of my friends and everybody else that gave their lives for what? The country of today. No, I'm sorry. The sacrifice wasn't worth the result that it is now.
Oh, well, I'm
what
sorry.
What do you mean by that, though, at this point?
What we fought for, and what we fought for was our freedom. We find that even now, it's downside worse than what it was when I fought for it.
Oh, Alec, I'm sorry you feel like that, because I want you to know that all the generations that have come since, including me and my children, are so grateful for your bravery and all that for service personnel. And it's our job now, isn't it, to make it the country that you've fought for.
There you go. How revealing. I mean, you have the veteran. It's Novemberance month over in Britain. They're remembering all of their veterans, the lives that were sacrificed for their freedoms. And then their cities like Birmingham, they're being overrun by Muslims who hate Jews, by the way. Turns out it wasn't about just protecting the fans of Maccabi Tel Aviv. No, it was purely about Jew hatred. Is this what British veterans fought for? Is this what they laid their lives down for? And then the talking heads, the commentators. Oh, listen, I'm sorry you feel that way. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Can't believe it's Friday. We've just raced along through this week. And here we are, and I'm happy to inform you that I've got way too much material for today's show, as per usual. You can get to the live video stream, by the way, of this show at our website, thetrumpet.com, or at the Rumble channel. Just go to rumble.com/trumpetdaily and tell your friends and family about the program. So, you know what's disgusting is that 5 years ago, when St. Floyd died, I mean, we had not, I mean, as if COVID wasn't bad enough to watch Aston Villa or any of the soccer matches over there playing in stadiums that were completely empty. And then before each match, they all took a knee, both sides, both teams. They took a knee for St. Floyd before they even knew any of the facts of the case. Because, well, you're just supposed to do it. You've got to stand against racism, right? And here last night, I didn't watch the match. I mean, as much as I like Aston Villa, I was pulling for Maccabi. I think Villa ended up winning. But still, did they take a knee for the Jews that are persecuted? The Jews that are singled out? I mean, it's so pervasive, this hatred for Jews. And it's out in the open. It's on display. It's in Britain. Is anyone taking a knee for the persecuted Jews? Did anyone take a knee after October 7 to stand against racism? To stand against anti-Semitism? Did that ever happen? Of course it didn't. No, that's reserved for George Floyd. That's reserved for fake racism. Here you have racism. I mean, it's as racism as you can get. They take to the streets in Birmingham, the UK's second largest city. What a disgusting display. How embarrassing and shameful. No wonder the veterans are in tears. Melanie Phillips says here, Britain's shocking Jew-free zone. A Jew-free zone in Britain? Is this true? Could this be true? That's right. The scenes in Birmingham last night demonstrated Muslim control of British streets. And yet, the commentators, they don't seem to be bothered by it. Muslim control of British streets? We're actually living at a time in Britain where Jewish fans are told not to come to a soccer match in Britain. I mean, we're not talking about going to a soccer match in Damascus or Kabul or Tehran. This is Birmingham, England. Birmingham, England. Yeah, stay away, Jews, because the Muslims control the streets. Last night in Birmingham, we saw that in Britain. It's Islam that now controls the streets, says Melanie Phillips. A Muslim mob presenting a serious threat of violence and disorder was allowed to stage a thuggish display of hatred of Jews, incitement against them, and intimidation. How hard do you think the crackdown would have been had protesters assembled around Villa Stadium to protest against taking a knee for George Floyd? I think those people would have been put to prison instantly. But not here. I mean, a thuggish display from Islam. Free speech. Just let it play out. It's okay. A lot of people hate Jews. That's no problem. The mob swarmed the area around Villa Park Stadium, where Aston Villa was playing Maccabi Tel Aviv. I mean, we drove by this stadium for 6 years, taking our kids to dance class. Right in the heart of Birmingham. We've been in the stadium, in fact. Right in the heart of Birmingham in Britain. It says the Maccabi away fans had been banned, reportedly for their own safety. The Muslims who demanded they be banned claimed instead that they were violent hooligans. But at last night's disgraceful scenes conclusively demonstrated it had nothing to do with the fans. The Israeli fans weren't there. So all these Muslims, they were crying out before the match, you got to keep those Jewish fans away. They're hooligans. They're going to cause trouble. And so the British authorities, they were happy to comply. Well, okay, let's keep the Jews away. We don't want a disturbance. And so they got the disturbance anyway. It turns out they just hate Jews. It says here the Israeli fans weren't there, but the mob still turned out to threaten violence against the Maccabi team itself and against the Jews. We don't like the Jews. We don't like the Jews that play for the Tel Aviv team. We just don't like the Jews, period. And we're British citizens. We run the streets of Birmingham. No wonder the veterans are in tears. Is this what we fought for? How disgusting that they would stand for this in Britain. But yet they'll just, you know, dust off and move on. We'll get on to the next item on the news cycle. And people won't pause and step back and think, what has happened to our country? What has happened to the United States and Britain? I mean, what we're seeing is an Isaiah 1 head-to-toe sickness. God prophesied of this. God told us this was coming. We're committing suicide. We're leaving ourselves vulnerable to enemies. We're inviting enemies in. Look at what happened in New York this week. It's in both countries. This is the Telegraph. If there's been a more shameful day in recent British history, I'm struggling to recall it tonight. Here's this author. I'm not sure who it is. Can't think of a more shameful day in recent British history. Great Britain, the greatest empire the world has ever seen. And here we are. If this doesn't underscore the truth contained in the United States and Britain in prophecy, I mean, what else is there? This proves who we are. This proves the New York mayor election and what happened last night in Birmingham. It proves that we're Ephraim and Manasseh. It proves we're being cursed. It proves that the tails become the head and the heads become the tail, just like it says in Deuteronomy. And as unrest flared around Aston Villa Stadium with pro-Israel protesters, herded into a caged basketball court by police for their own safety. Did you get that? The pro-Israel people, they've got to be protected by fences. They've got to be herded like caged animals to keep the mob from killing them, to keep the mob from attacking them. Telegraph says, we witness nothing less than the forces of Islamism exerting a stranglehold on our police, our government, and our country. So sad. I mean, it makes me want to cry, just like that veteran. This is Great Britain today? Well, it's Britain. It's not so great anymore. How must Keir Starmer have felt after vowing to do all he could to reverse the ban on Maccabi Tel Aviv fans, only to have been humiliated at the hands of a mob, a Muslim mob? Last month, the prime minister declared that the chant "From the river to the sea" was unequivocally anti-Semitic. What would he say about death, death to the IDF as it rang off the pavements of Birmingham? Death, death to the IDF. And then on this side of the pond, I would imagine Mamdani, or whatever his name is, the new mayor of New York, Zohran, he's probably fully supportive of it. And I would imagine in his heart of hearts, you know, Tucker kind of could sympathize with the mob too. I mean, the Jews control the U.S. government. They run the U.S. foreign policy. This is what we've been told, right? How must the 700 police officers have felt as they struggled to contain the brazen anti-Semitism, which originated in Pakistan and other foreign climes and was imported into Britain during decades of reckless immigration? Sound familiar, America? Decades of reckless immigration under the watch of good old Democrats and Republicans, too. And then Donald Trump shows up. He tries to stop it. And, of course, he's the racist. Of course he is. For upholding law and order. What has happened to our nations? Die by suicide, as Lincoln said. We're killing ourselves. Of course we are. So obvious. Strength by diversity? Is this really strength? Just inviting the whole world in? Talk about diversity. In Birmingham, the mob appeared almost exclusively Muslim and hostile. Yeah, all the Muslims showed up and no Jews did. Is that diversity? Is that strength? That is surrender. That's what that is. That's what it's called, surrender. How have we done this to ourselves? That's the Telegraph. What happened? What do we do? Is this what we fought for? Is this what our veterans died for? So much for Remembrance Day. What are we to remember? Muslim mobs overtaking our biggest cities? The crowd with the blood of Jews in its nostrils flew many flags tonight, that of Palestine, of Lebanon, Kashmir. One that was notable by its absence was the flag of Great Britain. Yeah, no British flags, no Jewish flags, just the flags of Islam in Birmingham, England. This was a tweet sent out following the mayoral election in Minneapolis. A significant number of Somalians in Minneapolis didn't vote for ethnic Somali mayoral candidate Omar Fatah due to Fatah being part of the Darod clan rather than the Hawiye. These deep-seated clan wars allowed Mayor Jacob Fry to rally key community leaders from the area or from Minneapolis. Matt Walsh responded to this by saying, American elections are now being decided based on tribal blood feuds in Africa. How did this happen? How did this happen where people of Minnesota or Minneapolis, they're just relieved that the radical left-wing white Democrat somehow squeaked by and won the mayor's office again ahead of the Somali Islamist? Didn't happen in New York City. No, they just opened the way for the radical Islamist whose allegiance is to the Ayatollah in Iran. How did this happen? The Telegraph asked this. They don't have the answers, do they? The U.S. and Britain in Prophecy gives you the answers. If you don't have a copy of that book, I mean, that's a must read. Given what's happening to our nations, call our operators today and make sure you request your free copy. There's no cost or obligation. I mean, this has been mailed to almost 7 million people worldwide, 7 million addresses. You need this text to understand what is happening to our nations. There is a sickness, a disease, a cancer from within, and it's exposing us to the dangers abroad. It's making us very vulnerable to attacks from the outside. Yesterday, Nancy Pelosi announced that she's retiring, finally. I think she's been in office since the mid-1800s. It's crazy. And this woman has done so much to help destroy America from within. And my father wrote about it after the midterm elections in 2006. I mean, she was in power, in the House, I mean, for decades, two decades, and just running the nation into the ground, even as she lined her pockets with cash, all the insider trading, oh yes. Listen to Hugh Hewitt as he talks about her announcement, clip 16.
What do you think? 40 years, Nancy Pelosi, what's going to be her legacy? Because everything I saw from her was just anti-Trump. She defined Trump derangement syndrome.
Nancy Pelosi became Democratic Party whip in 2001, and she has spent 25 years dragging it to the San Francisco Democrat left. And she succeeded most obviously in New York on Tuesday night with an anti-Semitic communist winning and a Marxist, just an out-and-out Marxist. So Nancy Pelosi's long march to the left is over, and she's leaving the Democratic Party with Comrade Mamdani as its face. I also have to say, you're right about Obamacare. It is her most significant legislative achievement. It's a disaster. It's a failure of epic proportion. That's why the Schumer shutdown is now the longest shutdown in history. They need a bailout. So I think history will not be kind to her.
And secondarily, her opposition to Republican presidents, starting with President Bush, and then, of course, President Trump, in which she engaged in two efforts to impeach the president and really move the House in a very partisan direction. I don't think there's any question about that. The House has become, you know, way less collegial. You know, she was Democratic leader for 20 years, which is an impressive feat. It speaks to her ruthlessness as leader, and no more so than when she effectively removed Joe Biden as president of the United States by ending his candidacy.
One of her legacies, I think, is also going to be San Francisco, because I was born up in the Bay Area. I only lived there until I was 7 years old, but it was an idyllic place. It was one of the best places in the country. And now you look at San Francisco, I wouldn't step foot in it because it's one of the most dangerous, destructive, the homelessness, the drug outbreak. I mean, it's horrific. And that is part of her legacy.
And the spiral down has been led by the San Francisco Democrats, of which Nancy Pelosi is the leading member. What she did, what she'll be remembered for, is what the congressman referred to. She ruled with an iron fist, a Democratic caucus that went left, then further left, and then further left.
Further and further left. And now the face of the party is Comrade Mamdani. Yeah, that's quite a victory for the Democrats. They're rejoicing. As I said on Wednesday's show, I mean, they couldn't be happier at the morning meltdown. The comrade is in charge of perhaps the greatest city in the world. And he's a devout, radical Islamist. Coming back to Pelosi, though, as I say, my father had this article, very memorable article. I think it appeared in January of 2007, but it was in response to the midterm elections of 2006. That's almost 20 years ago. And he said that that midterm marked a disaster in American history. What had, like the Telegraph says, I mean, what have we done to ourselves? Is this what the founders envisioned? That the tribal feud in Africa would settle the Minneapolis mayoral election? Is that what George Washington and Jefferson and Madison had in mind? What about the great founders of the British Empire? What about Winston Churchill, who fought for the empire, who saw the empire in decline and did everything he could to try to reverse it? What would he think about Birmingham last night? The scenes from the streets of Birmingham and the few pro-Israel protesters there. I mean, they're caged like animals. Got to protect them from the mob. The mob that's taken over the streets. My father says here, in November, the American government underwent a sea change. He's talking about November 2006. Changed American politics forever. I mean, this was before the Dear Leader came along. Pelosi was there. I mean, she worked hand in hand with Barack Obama. And then did every, as you heard there in that clip, she did everything she could to destroy Donald Trump. Remember that scene where Trump's speaking to Congress? And she's there, but as soon as the speech ended, she's there right behind him, ripping apart the speech of her president, the president of the United States. She was disgusted by President Trump and did everything she could to impeach, to destroy, to persecute, to lie, deceive. As President Trump said yesterday, I mean, she's an evil woman. I mean, that's in a lot of ways, that's what's refreshing about Donald Trump, because he's right. She is evil. And hardly anyone will say it. Now, we're all evil. I've been talking about that this week. We all have that wicked heart. And it's not like she's the only problem with America. But that picture that you see right there, I mean, that says a lot about where America was headed 20 years ago. And it says a lot about why we're here. The Telegraph asked this morning, I mean, how did we get here? How did this happen? Well, go back and look at what happened a decade or two ago, or in the case of Britain, go back a few decades. It says here, God may well have had a hand in these results, speaking of the midterm 2006 election. You don't need deep biblical understanding to realize that something is dreadfully wrong in this country. Something is wrong with America. The election of the Democrats, I believe, reveals the desperate lack of will in our people more than any other single event. We're sick. We have a lack of will. There's no pride in our power. And there's nobody holding up the standard, upholding law and order, defending the family, marriage, children. It was all unraveling, and it started before she even came along. But she came into power back in 2006 because of the sickness that set in Israel, Great Britain, the United States in particular. Neil Ferguson, the British commentator, he was on a podcast recently talking about just this spread of Jew hatred and the problem with modern education and our nations and the Democrat Party, et cetera, et cetera. Listen to clip 11.
It's very difficult to counter the radical left's alliance with Islamism because you quickly find yourself with some rather unsavory company.
Yes, yes.
And that has been a recurrent problem for more than a decade in European and in British politics too. You can't feel entirely comfortable with elements of the populist right because on close inspection, they may include people on the far right who are anti-Semitic too. Or you may find yourself uncomfortably close to people who seem rather keen on President Putin as a leader. So yeah. It's a very, very hazardous landscape that we now inhabit. And this is really an unexpected twist, is that the radical cultural left joins forces with the Islamists, first on campuses and then elsewhere. And the issue that they find, the one key issue that binds them together, is anti-Israel and anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism and anti-Judaism. It takes many different forms. And I think that final phase was only crystallized as recently as October 7th, 2023. But it was in the making for roughly 10 years before then.
And now, as he alludes to there, that you've got the conservative right also united with radical Islam. Joined together in their hatred for Jews. Jonathan Tobin's got an article at JNS. Tucker Carlson and Zohran Mamdani have a lot in common. Tucker and Mamdani? How did this happen? How did we get to this point? Well, coming back to this article my father wrote in January 2007, he said, the new Speaker of the House is a Democrat from San Francisco, Nancy Pelosi. This woman is pro-abortion, pro-homosexual marriage. I mean, this is where the Jew hatred that joins these bedfellows together, this is where they're different. Radical Islam is obviously not pro-homosexual marriage. What a world. She wants to allocate federal spending for stem cell research, which involves experimenting on unborn babies. Democrats are excited by the fact that endorsements of San Francisco values now echo through Washington's halls. Is this what America needs? Is this going to make America healthier? San Francisco is the homosexual capital of America. I mean, somebody's got to say it, and the trumpet did. It's the seat of liberalism and one of the most morally and spiritually bankrupt cities in the country. Now a leader saturated in San Francisco values and beliefs as one of the most powerful politicians in the land. This is not a good sign, my father says. 19 years ago. This is not a good sign for the country. You got to look at the direction. You got to see where this is leading. Follow the progression. Well, we've followed it, haven't we? These past 17, 18 years. And look at where we are. Look at what's happening on the streets of Birmingham. Look at what's happened on our own streets in America. Look at the bitter division. And here again, you have, at the same time, all this is going on. You've got nonstop talk about peace. We've made so much peace. I don't think I'll have time to get to all the sound bites. President Trump, just so encouraged, so heartened, so much love, so much peace. Look at the streets of Birmingham. It tells you everything that you need to know about making peace with Hamas. It's not going to work. It's not going to happen. It's not long term. It's certainly not eternal. What does God think of these elections? What does God think of the liberals now dominating the American government? And my father takes the reader through Isaiah 32. He points you back to the Bible. I mean, you can look at Isaiah 1 about the sickness from head to toe. You can look at Isaiah 3, as I mentioned recently, and see how upside down our society is and how leadership, true leadership, quality leadership, Bible-oriented leadership is gone. It's one of the curses that God has brought upon our peoples. Now, the fact that he intervened to save us from being blotted out through a Jeroboam type shows God's tremendous love and mercy and his patience and how he's just giving us a little more time to get our act together, to turn to him. But look, that was the handwriting on the wall back in 2006. San Francisco values are not good for Washington, D.C., for the United States of America. The truth of it is, San Francisco values have spread across Israel. It's in America. It's in Britain. It's in Judah. And as it happens, those three nations are being overrun by foreigners who hate America, who hate Britain, and who hate Judah. This is all prophesied. The United States and Britain in prophecy, as I say, it's a must read. My father says about verse 1 of Isaiah 32, it's talking about Christ's coming, his second coming. But then God allows some terrible things to unravel just prior to that event. He says, notice, this election marks the final chapter for the United States. We mourn to see America's downfall. I mean, that's what we're seeing. That's why the veteran is in tears on TV in Britain. And the hosts, they can't understand it. Look, what are you crying for? We're carrying on your legacy. I mean, we're championing San Francisco values. We've got San Francisco values in Birmingham. It's all over London. I don't see why you're so sad. Verse 5, Isaiah 32. The vile person shall be no more called liberal, nor the churl said to be bountiful. My father says the word liberal, this is Isaiah 32, in verse 5, he says, the word liberal implies goodness, something noble or generous. Democrats are often called liberals, and their values and beliefs are called liberal. Time magazine quoted Nancy Pelosi saying, I pride myself in being called a liberal, and I don't consider myself a moderate. This is what she said back in 2006. The problem is, my father says, much of what we call liberal is actually vile. It's filthy. It's perverted. What these people have done, even to words that used to be positive. Democrats have some of the vilest values and beliefs there are. That's the truth. And another uncomfortable truth is that Republicans are not very far behind. Now, at both parties, they love them some San Francisco values. Isaiah 32:5 is about God making sure that people with vile values will no longer be called liberal. God calls them repugnant and vile because that's what they are. You go and you take a label, you put it on your vile, repugnant behavior because you want to make it sound good. Liberal's a good thing, said Nancy Pelosi. I'm a proud liberal. Well, God calls it what it is. And so do my father here. Vile values predominate in Washington today, but they're foisted off on a naive people as being good and noble. He said San Francisco values could not be further from what the word liberal actually means. Listen again to Neil Ferguson. This is from that podcast interview, clip number 12.
And I think one has to recognize that the universities were places where people were paid to propose and teach, communicate radical ideas. Nobody else really wanted them. They weren't popular. Books about gender rights and critical race theory are unreadable, and they only became bestsellers when they were shoved down people's throats in the strange moral panic of 2020. Prior to that, these kinds of thing, these books and the articles that academics wrote weren't widely read. They existed in universities, in humanities departments, in departments of African American studies, in departments of gender studies. Many of these departments had come into existence after the 1968 student wave of protest, but it was really only gradually that they became significant parts of the academic establishment, but they grew. But what the US historians did changed from studying the history of the American polity or the Constitution to studying social and cultural issues, issues of identity politics, usually having to do with the experience of African American communities and the experience of women, and then the experience of gays and lesbians. All of that happened within the academy.
They weren't popular ideas. The texts were unreadable, as he says there. But it was pushed by the academy, pushed by modern education, pushed by Western education, pushed by Marxist professors, and just shoved down our throats. And so many people just accepted it. And now they look at the streets of Birmingham and they think, well, I guess this is just normal. I mean, it's multiculturalism, except that it doesn't include Jews, but leave that aside. We're multiculturalists. Listen, Mr. British veteran, we're here to carry on your legacy. What are you crying for? This is great, our society. We love it. We love this world. We invite the world in. We invite all of the world's paganism in, all of its false religion in. We let it take over our streets. Surely they'll love us as we do this. My father said in that 2007 article, according to God's values, America is decaying and withering like a dying flower, rotting at the core, losing its strength to survive. That's what we're watching in America and Britain. Nations that are losing their strength to survive. Don't drift into a false sense of security. Don't become complacent just because there's a brief, momentary, temporary resurgence economically or as far as law and order goes in the big cities of America. God has given us a preview of what's coming, whether it's the COVID scaremongering, the attack from Wuhan and from the dear leader, the George Floyd riots, using the death of a drug-addicted street thug as an excuse for anarchy, for mayhem, for violence and looting and burning. And now we're using Jew hatred as an excuse. Well, you got to give the mob some credit. I mean, the Jews are evil. How did we get to this point? What happened? Britain led the way in creating the opportunity for the Jewish people to have their own state in the Middle East, on their homeland. What happened? How did it happen so fast? I mean, the Israeli state, it hasn't even been around 80 years. Less than a century. We're not even that far removed from World War II. And as you heard in the cold open, there's that guy pleading with the British government. Look, you promised. You said this would never happen again. Never again would we be overtaken by the forces of tyranny. And, well, it's happening. And this time, we're just inviting it in. It's no problem. Very sad to see this. One more from Neil Ferguson, clip 13.
This all goes on more or less unnoticed by anybody else inside all the major universities over a period of maybe 20 years. And the backdrop, the sort of context within which this is happening, is a series of big outside shocks like 9/11 and the financial crisis and then COVID. And these are the shocks that young people experience that create economic uncertainty or create other anxieties. And then they get 4 years of exposure to these ideas. And these ideas are offering a series of profound critiques of the status quo. Critique number one, the United States is a terrible place based on white supremacy, slavery, and it hasn't really improved. Despite emancipation, in truth, it's still a racist society. Idea one. Idea two, it's a patriarchy in which the feminists have achieved almost nothing because there are glass ceilings everywhere and women don't get paid as much as men. That's also very bad. And, it's capitalist, I forgot. It's a highly unequal society in which wicked corporations pursue profit. And not only do they do that, but they also destroy the environment because they don't care about climate change, whereas young people do. And so these ideas are kind of added onto one another, and they become a comprehensive explanation of the wickedness of the world, and particularly the United States. But there's a missing ingredient, and the missing ingredient is supplied by Israel.
Our great educational institutions. We bring in students from all over the world. We bring in our own students, our own citizens. And what do we teach them? Well, teach them to hate America. Teach them to hate Great Britain. In recent weeks, I've been talking a lot about the spirit behind the Jew hatred. And it's the same spirit that's behind the American hatred and British hatred. Teach that. Teach our young people that we're racist, that we hate women, that we suppress women. They're doing a good job. And so when the streets are overrun with strangers, we think, well, we kind of need this because we're racist. The whites are racist. So turn the streets over to the Islamists, to the Muslims, and make sure you keep the Jews away. Pretty much Satan's goal is to keep the Jews out, keep the British out, keep the Americans out, and let everyone else in. I mean, that's Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. And this, as I say, it's covered in the United States and Britain in prophecy. We're coming right up to the end of this age. The sickness is through and through. You can put a stamp of liberalism on it if you want, but God calls it what it is. God says it's vile. God says it's corrupt. It's a sickness, and it's spreading. It's getting worse. One more from Neil Ferguson, clip 14.
There's something a little unsatisfying about Americans hating America. There's a sense in which that'll always be a bit hard to sell to, you guessed it, other Americans. So what you need to do is find some additional level villain. And the additional level villain is Israel. And so you have to recast the history of Israel. It stops being the project to create a homeland for Jews that has an added urgency after the Holocaust. And you turn it into the extreme version of settler colonialism, which is the thing that you hate the British for. Actually, the Palestinians were these lovable indigenous people, and along came wicked settler colonial Jews and created this dreadful state. And then you add on a few other things like apartheid, and then you say it commits genocide, and you think of all the bad things that have ever happened in history and you attribute them to Israel, and that creates a perfect enemy. And and of course it also creates a basis on which you can unite all kinds of progressivist movements, radical progressive movements, as you call them, with the Islamist movement that meanwhile has been busy building itself a constituency and a funding operation and a whole bunch of institutions inside the academy.
Inside the academy, pushing it. I mean, the perfect enemy is what brings it all together. Hate the Jews, hate the colonialists, hate the British colonialists, hate the American superpower. It's hate that joins all of these disparate groups together. The perfect enemy. And then you've got people on the right that are embracing this as well. The conservative right. It's easy to single out Tucker, but what about all the people that won't come out and denounce what Tucker's saying and thinking and doing? This was Megyn Kelly. She sat down with Tucker. I think the recordings hit yesterday. I'm not sure if it happened then, but this is clip 8.
No matter what your genes are, what you look like, or what your religion is, that you can change and that you can be saved by Jesus. That is Christianity in 3 sentences. And so that is reflected, even for people who aren't Christians, that is reflected in an ethical framework and a legal code that is the only truly unusual and great thing about the West, which is we do not punish the innocent. We only punish the guilty. We do not, you commit a crime, we don't throw your kids in jail. We don't execute your cousins. We don't commit genocide against your whole tribe. We punish you because you did it. We treat each person as an individual. That is Western civilization. That's a Christian understanding. It does not derive from any other religion. Christianity alone, unique, makes that claim. And that's the basis of our justice system, which, again, even non-Christians appreciate that we are awarding some people something because of how they were born and hurting others for the same reason. That is anti-Western. It's evil. And it leads, in the end, inexorably to genocide. That is the root idea behind what happened in Europe in the 40s under the Nazis. It's the root idea behind what happened in Rwanda in 1994. It's the root idea, just saying, behind what's happening in Gaza right now, where it's like, we're going to kill the kids too. We don't care. And we're going to, by the way, move everyone out because they're a people that is fundamentally opposed to us.
There you go. What's happening in Gaza? It's just like what Hitler did. It's just like what happened in Rwanda. Ethnic cleansing, genocide. He would make a good BBC commentator by this point. Tucker Carlson. How many years removed from Fox News? Just a few years. I forget the year that he left. Israel's committing genocide. He says this, by the way, after the uniqueness of Western values, how that, you know, if a single person commits a crime, we hold them responsible, not their families, not their nation. Even as he goes on and says, all the Jews are guilty. That's out of the mind of the devil. This article by Jonathan Tobin. Carlson and his pals, and I guess Megyn Kelly's one of them, have a lot more in common with New York City Mayor-elect Zohran Mamdani than they do with the overwhelming majority of Republicans and conservatives. That was confirmed when Carlson's newsletter, I mentioned this yesterday in passing, greeted the election of a Democratic socialist as the head of America's largest city by highlighting the fact that a minority of New York Jews voted for Mamdani. From Tucker's point of view, Mamdani isn't so bad because the new mayor of Gotham shares his loathing for Israel and a willingness to tolerate Jews only if they renounce a key part of Jewish identity and Judaism that is bound to the land of Israel. That fits the views of the minority of left-wing Jewish voters in deep blue New York who cast ballots for an anti-Semite because they likely see it as in keeping with their universalist values and distaste for sectarian elements of their heritage. We hate ourselves. I mean, we hate our country. We hate Israel. We hate America. We hate Britain. Well, it's leading to our demise, and it's happening. It's happening fast. And you see it. You see it on the streets. You see it in America. You see it in Britain. You see it in Birmingham. And you see it in little Israel as well. U.S. and Britain in prophecy has all the answers that you need. From Bible prophecy, God tells us how this ends. And thankfully, it's a happy ending if you include the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. Call our operators today and make sure you request the United States and Britain in prophecy. We'll leave it off there and conclude today's program with this week's segment of World Watch. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time.
Hurricane Melissa, the strongest storm ever recorded in Jamaica, struck the island on October 28th. The government declared the island a disaster area, but blocked roads, downed power lines, and widespread flooding hindered rescue efforts. The hurricane generated a storm surge of up to 13 feet and hit western Jamaica particularly hard, leaving more than 500,000 people without power. After leaving Jamaica devastated, the hurricane hit Cuba as a Category 2 storm, causing river levels to rise, blocking roads, and cutting off electricity for 241 communities, home to over 140,000 people. As these Caribbean nations pick up the pieces after yet another natural disaster, the question we should be asking is why God allows catastrophic weather events to occur in the first place. To learn more, read our free booklet, Why Natural Disasters. Moments before meeting with Chinese leader Xi Jinping on October 29th, President Donald Trump announced on Truth Social the resumption of American nuclear testing to begin immediately. Trump specified this was in response to provocations from Russia and China. The U.S. hasn't tested a nuclear weapon since 1992. Today, the threat of nuclear war is graver than ever. Nobody has used a nuclear weapon in a war for 80 years, so complacency is natural. Yet right now, two nuclear powers, Russia and Israel, are fighting major wars. Two others, India and Pakistan, fought each other months ago. The stakes have never been higher. To learn more about the danger of nuclear proliferation and what this nuclear testing will mean for the future of mankind, read Nuclear Armageddon is at the Door. The German government sees military drone technology as so important that it is funding even failed manufacturers to try to gain an advantage in the drone arms race. On October 31st, Bild reported that the German Defense Ministry had awarded three companies contracts worth $1 billion to produce 12,000 kamikaze drones, pending approval by the legislature. A secret drone test reportedly took place at the end of October at a German military base in Munster. Bild and the Financial Times reported that Helsing, a Munich-based startup, hit its target 17 times. Stark, a Berlin startup, failed both of its strike attempts. And Rheinmetall, a defense giant but a newcomer to drone production, did not show up for the test. Defense Minister Boris Pistorius announced earlier this month that Germany will invest more than $11 billion in drones in the coming years. Such investments will drive innovation in these German startups. This trend could transform the battlefield of the future. To learn more, read Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry's article, Germany is Arming for World War III. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.